Something extraordinary has happened to Judy Sizemore's closet, making it feel more like a closet. An area that once caused claustrophobia now has enough space to hold all of Judy's striped boat neck sweaters. And Judy Sizemore has a lot of striped boat neck sweaters. The Container Store Custom Closet Sale is here with up to 25% off all systems, including Alpha, through October 13th. The Container Store, where space comes from.
And now for an inside look at college sports with the men in the know, J.C. and Morgan. Here's Mike Morgan and J.C. Sherbert.
It is another installment of the J.C. and Morgan podcast. He is J.C. Sherbert of 24/7 Sports. I am Mike Morgan of ESPN and the SEC Network. We come to you from all points across North America. In this case, J.C. in Atlanta, the mecca of college football. In my case, a little more lazy down here in South Florida, where the college football talk is not rampant. Although I will say this, JC, I was talking to some friends of mine who are both Hurricane fans and Gator fans, and they're trying to get tickets to the crappy Citrus Bowl. It's the last time I was there. I think I did the MEAC SWAC Challenge on ESPN. I know they put some money into that place since then, but I have to believe it's still a pretty not great venue. Unless I miss something where they blew it up and started from scratch, I don't think that's the case. Anyway, you can't get tickets to that Miami Florida game for less than $300, and that's like upper deck. Remember, that's the first game of the season this year. They're starting a week before everybody else, kind of a unique little gimmick. It'll give those two programs some extra attention, not that they really need it, and it'll give us something to actually watch. That is a week previous, but everybody around here is talking about how insane the ticket prices are for that game. It's kind of ironic because last podcast we were talking about how alcohol sales are now infiltrating some of the SEC schools, and I really believe a huge motivating factor for that is you got a lot of problems with people showing up to games, not buying tickets, mind you, but showing up to regular season games. So I like when I hear those kind of stories. I hate it for my friends that are buying tickets, but I do like to hear that it shows that there's still some health in the sport for fans that want to go.
Well, yeah, and you know, I mean, because you grew up down there, that Florida and Miami used to be kind of it was probably more of a heated rivalry at times when they played annually than Florida and FSU. I mean, so you have a rivalry game that doesn't get played often. You have it in a venue where, you know, Gators and Hurricanes both can travel up and back in a day, and it's, you know, it's in a great city regardless of the stadium. And they have done – it is a little better. And then on top of that, it's a week before the actual opener of college football. So, you know, it's not like if you're sitting there going, well, you know, I could stay at home and watch the Gators and Canes, but I could also, you know, I could go to the game, but then I'd miss all these other great games. So why don't I just sit here and have a beer and have bathrooms and not go? I mean, it's the only show in the country. And so I think that you know, being the season opener and people being football starved and with that particular game, I think it's going to be big. And, you know, on top of that, you know, you have a debut of a head coach in Manny Diaz at Miami. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, I do like to hear that as well, because I remember the days, you know, in the early 2000s at South Carolina when they went to the Outback Bowl and you couldn't get a ticket. They played Ohio State. You couldn't get a ticket two straight years. And now, right, you know, when the Gamecocks go to the Outback Bowl, the lower deck's full, and that's about it. So I do like hearing that, and I think it's good for the health of the sport.
I do too. You know, bowl game attendance continues to be an issue for just in general. I mean, minus the playoff, of course. Bowl games and conference championship games, minus the SEC in Atlanta, which is sold out before the season even starts every year. If you take those, what, one, two, three, four games out of the postseason equation, almost every other game is struggling with fannies in the seats. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole other issue on how do you solve that. You know, we've got six more years, I believe. This is year six of the four-team playoff. And as much as people want to clamor and insist on expanding it. It's not going to be expanded in the next 6 years. I'm convinced of that. I think this contract will run out, and then we will move from 4 to 8. That's just my little crystal ball. I've been wrong before. I hope I'm wrong. I hope they expand it in 2 years, but I don't think it's going to happen. Nothing in the NCAA moves that fast. They move at a glacial pace, and for that matter, it's not so much an NCAA issue as it is the conference commissioner. The Power Five conference commissioners basically rule college football, and I just don't see that changing anytime soon. Speaking of things that might not change anytime soon, but I do believe will change. I always welcome we both are very active on Twitter, probably you so more than me, but you're at JC Sherbert. I'm at Morgan on Air. And usually the stuff I get on Twitter is feedback on this, that, and the other. It's usually overwhelmingly positive. And a lot of times if somebody disagrees with you for whatever reason, they're like they don't want to do it on Twitter. They'd rather do it on a third party or another venue or whatever. And as opposed to just going head on with the person, which I've never totally understood. Like, first of all, this is my passion, but it's not my life. I always have to remind myself that. So sports and college football and broadcasting is my passion, but it's not my life. So opinions on this stuff, if I'm right or if I'm wrong or someone disagrees or someone thinks I'm crazy, like I don't take it to bed with me. Like, it's okay. It's a healthy disagreement. Reasonable people disagree. So somebody on a forum, I guess, that you and I are both familiar with, took umbrage with something I probably said, I guess, a couple months ago. We haven't really talked about it much lately. But you and I both talked about the fact that for right now, we are living in an Alabama-Clemson world in college football. The person kind of insinuated that I think that's going to be that way till kingdom come. You know, that's infinite. I don't believe it's infinite. Never said so. I think it's cyclical. It's college football has always been cyclical, but it's also always been somewhat predictable in the top powers. If you're going to ask me 10 years from now, are Clemson and Alabama going to be playing for another national championship? I'll take the field. I'll say no. For one thing, what would be the Vegas odds that both Nick Saban and Dabo Sweeney are still at those schools 10 years from now? 10. My guess is at least one will be gone. One way or another. For years I've said Dabo's not leaving for Alabama. If anything, he'd leave for the NFL before that. And I think the rest of the national media is coming around to that opinion 5 years later. And for Nick Saban, he's not going to the NFL, but certainly he could have health issues. But he's not a young guy. He looks great, but he's not. 7 years from now, Nick could have to call it quits. You never know. He could get tired of Alabama fans complaining every time they don't win a national championship. So I don't think this is permanent. But if you are convinced that that is wrong, that we're not living in a structure where it's basically two programs that are atop of the heap, and then you've got programs like Georgia and Ohio State flirting with that that level. Oklahoma, I guess, we'll add in there. I'm not putting Notre Dame in there because every time they play in a big playoff game, they don't just get beat, they get waxed. You're living in denial if you don't see it. That's been the case. Alabama, Clemson have just been a cut. Now, I realize that upsets other fan bases, rivals of those particular schools. You think being an Auburn fan is easy? You got to constantly look at that school 2 hours down the road, and it's a love fest for Alabama and Nick Saban every stinking year. I get it. It's frustrating. But that's just where it is right now. Eventually, it will change. I don't see it changing in the next couple of years. Look at the recruiting. It doesn't let up for those schools. Look at the built-in advantages that they have. It doesn't let up. And again, those coaches aren't leaving in the next couple of years. So when you add all that up, JC, why would you say anything else other than we are presently living in an Alabama-Clemson world in college football?
There's no doubt about it. I mean, 2015, 2016, and 2018, they met for the national championship. 2017, they met in the semis. It is with the playoff era in college football. I hate to say this because there's so many more programs that actually put huge resources into this sport compared to this sport I'm about to mention. But it's almost like women's basketball. when Tennessee and UConn were kind of dominating, and then you had maybe a Notre Dame, maybe a Baylor, but it was basically a Tennessee and UConn world in women's basketball. And I hate to use that comparison because, you know, women's basketball, you know, everybody funds it, you know, everybody tries to a certain extent, but you got some schools that really put a lot more into it than others by hiring coaches, and they get all the good recruits and et cetera, et cetera. I think it's a little, as far as breaking up the cabal, I think it's a little easier in football because, you know, we can all sit there and talk about star ratings and highly ranked classes and things like that all we want. But the fact is, you know, Clemson, their highest rated recruiting class before they started this national championship kind of run, before they won their first one, was ninth. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them were in the teens. And then you have Florida State, and I went back and we'll talk about this later, the article about Jimbo Fisher and the culture declining and all this other stuff. You know, their class is ranked like third, second, fifth. You know, Tennessee, over the course of 4 years under Butch Jones, numerically, if you're just looking at the team rankings, out-recruited Clemson. So did Southern Cal. And you see the difference between those programs. And this year, obviously, Clemson has the number one recruiting class. Bama has the number two. You know, it's a bump, obviously, with talent. But, you know, I think that there's just no other way to put it. You know, in the playoff era, you know, we've had five playoffs. There's been 20 teams to make it. You know, of those 20, and I'm talking about individual teams, you know, like 2015 Clemson would be one. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 of the 20 have come from either Clemson or Bama. If you throw Oklahoma in there, which has dominated the Big 12, you know, that's 10, 11, 12. So 12 of the 20. 12 of the 20, Mike. And then Ohio State's made two playoffs and won a national championship. So, you know, those four programs, 14 out of the 20 playoff berths. You've had Oregon, you've had Washington, you've had Notre Dame, you've had Michigan State, and you've had Georgia. And I'm probably leaving one out, but or maybe Ohio State had an extra one. But, you know, it's basically been, you know, a kind of, like I said, a cabal.
And spell that for me, by the way. I'm still new to this word, cabal.
C-A-B-A-L. It's a term I picked up from watching The Blacklist. it's like a consortium or something.
And I like it because I'm always stuck on duopoly and oligarchy, which I think is essentially what we have in college football. But a cabal sounds a hell of a lot better, so I'm going to start using that.
It's a cabal. And, you know, Alabama – and this is a fascinating thing, too. You know, Alabama's had this top-rated recruiting class for like eight out of 9 years, and everybody uses that as an example as to why star rankings matter. I mean, it's almost gotten ridiculous. I read an article today from a Georgia reporter, okay, and he's breaking down the dogs too deep, and he's like, these are the three-star players that are doing good. And he acted like, in the tone of the article was like, you know, these guys are just massively overachieving players, and they're not really as talented as these. And that's just not reality. When you get to be a freshman, you know, star ratings, and I was around when all this was, I was working in this business when we kind of created what it was and defined clearly what it was. It's about potential. You know, maybe basketball, maybe not so much because you have more finished products, and those guys are going to the league within 18 months. Football, it's not that way. And if you look at the draft numbers, yeah, about half the draft picks are 4 and 5 star guys. Half of them are, you know, 3 star or lower. Some are no stars. And that, you know, when you're talking about individual players, you know, we know that football is a whole lot more developmental and things like that. And that's Clemson's secret sauce. You know, Clemson developed players. I mean, Jordan Leggett and Hunter Renfro in the national championship game in 2016, last I checked, they made some huge plays against an Alabama secondary that had a bunch of NFL players in it. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let me tell you about Hunter Renfro. And Hunter Renfro's the exception, not the rule. Walk-on quarterback from Sockestee, South Carolina, down near the beach. I don't know what it is about, you know, beach guys that Clemson finds receivers at, but, yeah, he went and did it. He caught the game-winning pass and was uncoverable against Alabama twice, maybe three times. And Jordan Leggett, the tight end, who caught a 35-yard pass, super athlete. He was a three-star prospect out of Navarre, Florida, another great beach town. I've been there, spent a few days there one time. You know, that they just found. And you know, the, Alabama, it's really like, is it the cart or the horse? I mean, Alabama is the best evaluating team in the country. They take the right highly rated players. But they're starting that evaluation process 2 years before anybody's ever ranked. And they do such a good job of putting guys in the NFL that, that an Alabama offer or committing to Alabama means something, because you're not rating team, you're rating individual players. And so you're like, well, you know, this guy must be pretty good because Nick Saban's pretty good. And they are. You know, so is it the cart or the horse? You know, because you look at FSU and some other schools that have always recruited, you know, high, and it's not the, you know, it's almost unfair, you know, how Alabama can evaluate and develop, and Clemson is right there with them. Quarterbacks, obviously, they're special. You know, and I think that, you know, what's going to stop Clemson and Alabama is not looking at the team recruiting rankings every year like a lot of fans do and panic. Because that's like panic, and it's a false sense of panic. It's like looking at your Twitter followers and thinking you're a celebrity. You know, because all that is about potential. Another, if you have a bunch of followers on Twitter, all that means is you have potential to influence. Okay, there's still work that has to be done, and so instead of panicking, you know, other schools just have to, you know, make better coaching hires. You know, make sure these people can evaluate talent, because some of them can't. You know, I am staunchly of the belief that, you know, great if Georgia signs more five stars. Super. I mean, that usually mathematically pays off. But I don't think that was the difference between Georgia and Alabama. I think Alabama recruited and developed better along both lines of scrimmage. And Georgia did not. And Georgia would get five-star players out of Georgia every year, but Alabama would come in and sneak some out. You know, so you got to recruit your state. It's not about going to, you know, all over the country and getting five stars. The stars have nothing to do with it. And Clemson is a perfect example of that. Clemson has some five-star players, man. There's no doubt. But they also have some three and fours that are pretty damn good. And so I think instead of panicking about what happens in the off season, and then going and athletic directors get dumb and they're like, you know, they want to copy other schools and say, oh, well, this could be like this, and oh, they're recruiting well and all this. Well, then you get to the season and it's 8-4, 7-5, something like that, because the some of the coaches don't really have a plan. You know, they don't really have a plan to play. So we'll see what happens. And that brings us to our first topic of the day. And this
are you diving into one?
I'm gonna dive into one. Because
we got about seven.
Okay. Well, yeah. All right. So, yeah.
Can I just add one more thing
just
on
add,
Alabama?
Add that. Yeah. I ran over you there. Sorry.
No, that's good. No, that's good. I like when you go off on a tangent. You see things differently than a lot of people, because again, you have been knee deep in the national recruiting scale, and I think, obviously, that's the lifeblood of any program. And if you're going to be a heavyweight like those two are, you're going to look at success in recruiting. As you pointed out, they're not all five stars. You do have some three-star kids. I mean, that story has been as old as the start of recruiting, in that there's a lot of two-, three-star kids that turn out to be NFL-type players. There's a lot of five-star kids that turn out to be busts. I do think what makes Alabama unique is that, and I'm not saying that these guys are chopped liver, but they have done it without necessarily the best of the best in quarterback play. Now, we'll see how Tua responds this year, and he's obviously very good, and he's going to be a first-round draft pick. And even kids like A.J. McCarron, who people said were system quarterbacks, A.J. McCarron's still working in the NFL and will probably be a 12-year guy as both a predominant backup and occasional starter. So it's not as if they've had chopped liver under center. But Nick Saban, to me, is one of the few coaches that can build a heavyweight championship program without having elite quarterback play every season. They have gotten it or close to it recently. That wasn't always the case. Dabo's version of Clemson, Dabo 2.0, 3.0, whatever you want to call it, didn't get over that final hurdle until they had first-round quarterback-type play. Taj Boyd was a fine quarterback, but he was not Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
Okay? He was certainly not Trevor Lawrence. Deshaun Watson is a first-round draft pick for a reason, is going to have a long career in the NFL. And you could sit here and debate whether or not he'll be elite or not. I don't care to get into that, but he'll be good enough to be a starter for a long time. Trevor Lawrence is going to be Trevor Lawrence would probably have been the number one overall pick in this draft if we drafted football players the way we do basketball players, which is based on a small sample size and incredible upside. Trevor Lawrence would be the number one pick in the overall draft, number one overall pick in the draft after this, his sophomore season. But he won't be eligible until after his junior year, which is a huge coup for Clemson in multiple ways. So that's when Clemson became national championship good and not just really good, when they finally got over the quarterback hump.
Yeah.
But at most programs, if they're good, Oklahoma's only been even in the conversation because they've had not only first round draft picks at quarterback, how about number one overall picks at quarterback? Ohio State, first round draft picks at quarterback. So the few schools that we mentioned in this oligarchy, in this cabal, they all not only recruit 4- and 5-star kids. And I think there's usually about 30 to 45 star kids in a class, mm-hmm. and another 300 that are 4-star kids. And if you look at these rosters, they're chock full of them. But the elite of the elite.
Are you hungry for the usual today? Or are you ready to spice things up with the new Nashville Hot Brisket from Firehouse Subs? We're kicking up our slow-smoked beef brisket with Nashville Hot Seasoning. It's topped with melted pepper jack and our sweet and tangy slaw, served piping hot on a toasted cornbread roll. Yeah, a cornbread roll. Save time. Order your new Nashville Hot Brisket on the Firehouse Subs app today. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Participating locations, limited time only.
They all have franchise quarterback. They all have NFL guys under center. And you're not going to win in college football to a championship level if you don't have one of those guys. So at some point, I do believe things will change. A 5-star quarterback that's going to be a first round draft pick is going to want to go to a school that's not Alabama or Clemson, but he's not going to go to a school like Missouri and Drew Locke, where you're not going to win a national championship because you're not going to have enough talent around you. He'll go to that next tier, and maybe that'll be what you know, gets you over the hump. Who the heck knows? I don't think it's going to last forever, but if you don't think we're in a duopoly, first off, with those two, and then an oligarchy because you only add another five, would I love to see some fresh blood in the mix? Hell yeah. Mm. I think it'd be great for college football, but we're not there. And the beauty of college football is, for all its flaws, for 100 years of having the most embarrassing way to determine a national championship in the history of athletics, to the present day, where we only talk about five schools, maybe eight, having a legitimate chance at winning a national title. We still love the hell out of it. We still are obsessed with every Saturday. The fans still care about a team that goes 7-5 because it's their team, damn it. And so they're passionate about it. All right. Well, all that being said, go ahead.
I'll add two things. First, on Clemson, the quarterback play, I'm 100% with you there. I mean, Deshaun Watson was a difference maker, and Trevor Lawrence is a different. I mean, they're both generational type talents. But Clemson also improved their defensive line. Mm-hmm. Before Brent Venables got there, they really kind of struggled in that department, and they actually improved both lines of scrimmage. And I think that helps. Clemson's a good line of scrimmage team. I mean, that's why they can line up and beat Alabama. You know, number two, yeah, everybody absolutely still loves college football. And this is not the NBA, okay? And this is another thing that gripes me. People see the 5-star guys and all that, and there's almost like an NBA mindset where you go, well, they're putting together a super team. No, these are high school players. And I think it also gets skewed because we've had an abnormal amount of freshman quarterbacks step in and play on the biggest stage of the season. Jake Fromm was a true freshman when he led Georgia to the national championship game. Tua Tagovailoa won them a national championship, came to another. You know, Trevor Lawrence won a national championship. You know, there's been two straight true freshman quarterbacks to win a national championship. And so I think that kind of, and they're both five-star players and both well-deserving, but I think that's kind of skewed people because there's 11 positions on either side of the ball in football. Basketball, you know, you can get Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and put together a super team. You know, you can do that. I mean, you know, and that's, you know, as long as the Warriors have those guys, the Rockets, even though they got James Harden, they're going to have a hard time getting by them. But college football is not that way. It is an Alabama-Clemson war, but on any given Saturday, I mean, look, if they were unbeatable, if Alabama and Clemson were unbeatable, first of all, Alabama would not have lost to Clemson by four touchdowns. Everybody has a bad day. Second, do you think Clemson would have nearly gotten knocked off by Syracuse and gotten right. knocked off by – I mean, Clemson's four losses in the last, what, 5 years are, you know, Bama twice and Syracuse and Pitt.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so, yeah. I mean, it, you know
– they've been known to let their guard down. And let's not forget – Georgia fans are sitting there saying we should have beaten Alabama the last 2 years, but we spit the bit in the fourth quarter.
There's no doubt. So I want to encourage all of you that are discouraged by this, that, you know, college football is not like the NBA. It's not about, you know, nobody's putting together super teams based on star ratings, you know, because NBA free agency is about proven superstars. Okay. College football recruiting ratings are about long-term potential. And it's rare. We're in a rare time where at quarterback you do have a Trevor Lawrence and you do have a Tua and Jake Fromm stepped in and played well. But it's not that way, you know, and the sport will cycle back in the other direction.
I will say one thing to just put a cap on it. Well, all right, two things. I can't help. This is such a good conversation, I know, JC. I can't.
We always do this.
This is what we do. We didn't even go into this. For those of you that don't know, like we don't have producers like some of the national podcasts you listen to that are giving us notes and formats. You know, that's what I was used to doing some sports talk in Atlanta, and you know, even when going back to the local smaller market sports talk shows, you come in, you come with an idea, maybe you type out a format. We don't do any of that. But we do usually have like five or six bullet points we're going to hit. This wasn't even on the agenda. This was just something that came out there. But you got two guys who love college football and, dare I say, have a little bit of knowledge about it. And so you can't help but thinking about all these things once we get rolling on a topic inadvertently and it just snowballs. So, okay. Two things on all of this. Number one, I'm a big believer. Jimmy Johnson had football nailed going back to his days at Miami. And it's true in the pros, but let's just stick with college football. And what made me think of this is when you talked about Clemson's defensive line. Jimmy Johnson said you build with two things, and then you go from there. Your quarterback, everybody knows that one, and your defensive line. And if you look at these teams – that are routinely winning national championships and in the hunt, I will show you teams that have elite quarterback play with few exceptions and elite defensive line with almost no exceptions. I mean, look at all the beasts on the D-line for Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma, even though they've been porous on defense, they've had some dudes on defensive line that have been drafted highly. They just – nobody plays great defense in the Big 12, and that cycles into the – postseason. But quarterback and D-line, I think Jimmy Johnson had it nailed. The other thing I would just say, and I like your optimism overall, and yeah, I don't get all wrapped up in recruiting rankings, but I will say this. I think it's become harder and harder if you're not one of those programs that is in the top tier. And we can debate who the top tier is, but it's the same again, 6 to 8 schools we talk about every year competing for the championships in their league and the championships in the playoff. I think we've never had a situation where the rich get richer, both figuratively and literally, and the rest of the guys either stay where they are or sometimes even regress. The UConn subject we'll get into eventually. That's on one of our topic du jour list here. I was reading where, you know, there, of course, the American potentially is trying to get another school. Well, how do you lure in a BYU or an Army, whoever it's going to be? Well, money, right? So you know what the TV contract is for the American? And they were happy to get it, believe me. It's about $7-8 million a year. The SEC schools are raking in over 40. The Big Ten schools are raking in nearly $50 million a year. So there's such a chasm between Power Five and Group Five, and then within the Power Five, there's so many built-in advantages for those schools that are really good right now versus the ones that have been historically mediocre. And I see that gap widening, not closing.
Well, I mean, it's up to, you know, there's about 25 to 30 schools that have a chance. And that's everybody from, you know, Bama on down to Texas Tech. I mean, let's say Texas Tech, TCU, some of those schools in the Big 12. I think the one thing I love about the Pac-12 and also hate about its current state is that if you think about the Pac-12, Mike, there's no Wake Forest or Vandy or Duke, and this is no offense to any of those schools, or, you know, like in the Big 10, and I hate to even say Northwestern because they won a division title last year, but if it weren't for Pat Fitzgerald and his plan and all that, Northwestern would, you know, resource-wise, Northwestern and Indiana would be kind of at the bottom of the Big Ten. There's no school like that. You know, people say Oregon State, but when Dennis Erickson was there, they went 11-1 and won the Fiesta Bowl and beat Miami 41-9. Mike Riley had some good years there. Oregon's won a national championship, been to a playoff. Washington is back. They're historically good. Then went through the wilderness, and now they're back. Stanford, Cal has been good at times. UCLA, SC. Even Utah and Colorado, the newcomers, Utah had an undefeated season under Urban Meyer and, you know, went to the Fiesta Bowl and won. And, you know, when they were in the Mountain West, also they beat Bama by 20 in the Sugar Bowl one year. They won a division title last year, and they're the favorite to win it this year. Colorado, you know, has kind of been in the wilderness and at times the abyss. But they won the 1990 national championship under Bill McCarty. Now, were they deserving? No, I'd say Georgia Tech was. But almost going on now, a 30-year-old debate because, you know, they had the fifth down game and all that. But the point is every program in the Pac-12 has potential. So you got about 35 schools that put the money into football. Their fans love football. You know, they're going to build facilities. They're going to do that. But if you think about it, Mike, we've had, you know, name programs kind of sink and rise. I mean, Florida State, later years under Bowden, sunk. Jimbo got him back, won a national title. Ohio State, you know, they fired John Cooper. Tressel got him and won a national championship in his second year. The only school, and you got good stories like Michigan State, and you got Oregon that took, I mean, Oregon took 30 years to get to the point they were at when they played for two national titles, because it started with a guy named Rich Brooks, and then Rich Brooks retired, he handed it off to a guy named Mike Bellotti, and they got better and better, and then Mike Bellotti just so happened to have the intelligence to go to New Hampshire and hire their offensive coordinator. There's a guy named Chip Kelly, and they started rolling. And then Mark Helfrich gets the job because he's the guy that followed the guy, and you never want to be the guy that followed the guy. And he has one bad year, and he's out. But he also had a national championship team that played for a national championship. But Oregon took 30 years to build. 30.
And a lot of Nike money.
Yeah, and you have good stories like Michigan State that made a playoff. You have a good story like Kansas State under Bill Snyder that, you know, they won some games, and they were close. But the only school that's kicked the door in, and this is a school that did win the 1981 national championship, so they had been there before. They were a power – they were probably a top-five program for about 8 years in the 1980s. Other than that, they've been good, not great. It's Clemson. And even though everybody – this is why the Clemson job's great, because it's like a big SEC program, and like you always like to say, the path of least resistance, they play in the ACC.
Right.
I mean, so – even at Clemson's most mediocre, they're still just going, well, we need to beat Florida State, and that's it. They got one team to pass, one team. If you're an SEC school, you got six, seven, and it's not going to last. And so, you know, if you think about it like that, the only program to kind of kick in the door and win it is Clemson. And, you know, it took them a little while. You know, they were already pretty good. C.J. Spiller and James Davis were already there. Okay, Dabo wins the 2009 ACC Atlantic. That's the first time Clemson had won the division title. And other schools like, oh, Boston College had won the Atlantic Division. Wake Forest had won the Atlantic Division. Florida State had won the Atlantic Division. I mean, you know, that was their first division title. That was huge. Well, then, okay, so, you know, the next year wasn't that good. He makes some key coaching hires. Brent Venables and Chad Morris come in. And look, the next year they won the ACC for the first time in 20 years. 20. Two decades. The ACC. And then they started recruiting on top of that, and Brent Venables built the defense. And Clemson, you know, losing to South Carolina this entire time, losing to Florida State most years this entire time. They go and they keep recruiting, and they keep celebrating their wins. I mean, Clemson beat Auburn, an Auburn team that finished 8-5, I think, in 2011? Was it the year after they won the national championship? Yeah. By two touchdowns at Death Valley. Auburn was an 8-5 football team that year. Clemson beat them by two touchdowns. You'd have thought they won the national championship. They promoted it. That helps recruiting. And you celebrate your victories. You know, all that good stuff. And then finally, you know, hey, they get a kid named Deshaun Watson. They're improving the lines of scrimmage. That 2015 team had some close games, some close calls. But they got there, and they played their asses off against Alabama and almost beat them. And then set it up for the next year. And you know, that's the only program that's been able to kind of break in. I call it the entry point. Now, people can argue that they passed the entry point in 81, but that was a different time, and things were different back then. You know, in modern college football, you have to get to the entry point and then kick in the door. And then if you want to get, it's like going into a club. You know, you're in line for the club. The bouncer's looking at you. Are you on the list? Are you off the list? I don't know. I don't know if I'll get up here. And when you get up there, and if your name's on the list or you can kick in the door and go in, then you got to find the national championship VIP room. And that has another bouncer and another line. And it's just, it's fundamentally hard no matter how many resources you have. That's what's so impressive about, you know, Nick Saban and what he's done at Bama. They're there every year. Consistency. No other school has that. You know, Georgia's been up and down. They're up now, but they've been down. Ohio State, who, again, recruits as well as anyone in the country, their defense was atrocious last year. They gave up 51 to Maryland. 51 to Maryland. They gave up 49 to Purdue. They gave up a combined 100 points to teams whose starters probably don't have as many stars combined as Ohio State's second team. Okay? And yet, you look at Kentucky, and they had, what, 6-7 starters from Ohio on the nation's fifth-ranked defense? You know, so, again, who's making better evaluations? But it's just hard. It's hard to sustain. It's hard to keep going. Look at the Florida Gators. You know, two national championships in 3 years. Everybody thinks it's going to roll. You know, Urban Meyer's down there. And then, boom, something happens. They signed the top recruiting class in the history of recruiting classes numerically in 2010. But nobody was checking the character boxes on that one. And so it ended up being Bus City and ultimately driving Urban Meyer out of the job in Gainesville. You know, look at Florida State. I mean, there's just countless examples. Why has Texas been soft as tissue for 7 years?
Yeah.
You know?
No, I think where you're going with that is it's a lot easier to get out of the elites than it is to get into the elite.
Yes.
So, yes – this goes back to the initial point. It's cyclical, and I don't believe Alabama and Clemson. They're not predestined to be the top two programs in college football for the rest of our lifetime. However, one of them will drop, let's say, in the next 5-10 years, just like Florida State dropped, just like Florida dropped, just like Ohio State dropped, just like Nebraska dropped, like all the other examples of that. But then who gets back in? Who supplants those teams? It's just another power program. The only exception to the rule, as you mentioned, is Clemson, which was eventually irrelevant for about 30 years under the likes of Tommy West and Ken Hatfield and Tommy Bowden. And then they finally struck gold and a guy that nobody else wanted as their head coach in Dabble Swinney. Again, sometimes a little luck goes a long way in building a power and winning championships. But that is the exception. For the most part, when one of those power elite 10 top 10 programs does drop out, and they always Southern Cal, another one we got to mention in that category, then it's just like another one goes in. Mm-hmm. It's like the same dozen programs are fighting for the same three or four slots every year. It's a game of musical chairs, but everybody else is in the stands watching that game.
Around the same time that Southern Cal dropped, Florida rose. I mean, Southern Cal was, they lost that game to Texas, which was still one of the best individual performances by a college football player I've ever seen in Vince Young in that game. And Reggie Bush was pretty dang good in that game, too. It's one of the best games I've ever seen.
Agreed.
They lose that game to Texas. The next year's not so good. Florida did not score over 30 points in a single game against an SEC opponent until the SEC championship game because they got Chris Leak in that offense. It's kind of cattywampus. They beat Arkansas. Things happen, and they get the berth to go play what we all thought was number one, the Ted Ginn Ohio State team, and they rout them. Next year, Tebow wins the Heisman. The next year, they win another natty. The next year, they go, and guess who supplants them? Alabama.
Right.
And then
and maybe Georgia supplants Alabama. Who knows? And maybe Florida State, when they fire Willie Taggart and they bring in another coach, maybe they supplant Clemson. Who knows? We're still talking about the same dozen schools.
That's the bottom line, okay, so the chances of, NC State supplanting Clemson or Boston College or Wake Forest or Syracuse, although watch out for Syracuse against Clemson. The chances of those schools supplanting them in the division are very slim. Who's got the ability to do it, though? The Seminoles. So you want Clemson not to be, on top of college football anymore? Well, that's largely up to Florida State. I mean, I suppose you could build a monster at NC State or, someplace like that. But, it's largely up to Florida State. If not up to them, it's up to the schools in the other division, like, Virginia Tech, North Carolina, schools like that that have constantly, Virginia Tech does not constantly underachieve, but those schools that have a chance. And, so that's the thing. If Alabama is to be supplanted, that's largely up to Auburn and LSU and maybe even Texas A&M. So, and then in the other division, Georgia. Because I'm like that movie AI where they created the little artificial intelligence boy and he sinks to the bottom of the ocean. He's still alive because he's a machine and he comes back a million years later and everybody looks like a ghost. I'm like that guy waiting for Tennessee and Florida to come back. I'm like that little robot sitting at the bottom of the ocean. A million years have passed. We're still waiting. We're still waiting. We're still waiting. And look, could it happen? Yeah, it could happen this year. It could happen in a couple of years. I like Jeremy Pruitt and Dan Mullen, but I'm still waiting. I'm still waiting on those guys, and so Alabama, look, the Pac-12, you're telling me that the University of Southern California cannot put together a roster full of studs that can go beat Clemson or Alabama in a national championship.
Oh, it's going to happen.
I mean, that's the whole thing.
But that's, again, I call them volcano programs because – it's only a matter of time before they erupt. There's too many built-in advantages with facilities, resources, tradition that they're not going to stay down forever. And you have those dozen volcano programs, and then you have 100-some-odd other Division I schools that are just trying to knock on the door and maybe have a moment in the sun. We talked about UConn a moment ago, and we'll circle back to that story and a myriad of others here. Do people remember UConn was in a Fiesta Bowl in 2010 under Randy Edsall?
Yeah.
Do people remember that? They were. I mean, they somehow they did it. So, I mean, we've seen glimpses of teams that they're kind of the version of, say, Butler or George Mason that are good enough to get to the Final Four, but then you never hear from them again. Right? So, and that's what college football has. They have a couple – every few years you have a George Mason – or a Butler, And then you come crashing down. Those programs come crashing down to earth. And what are we talking about per usual? And basketball has more variety. Well, any sport has more variety than college football right now. But for the most part, it's still the blue bloods in college basketball that move the meter. It's still your Kentucky, your Duke, your North Carolina. That hasn't changed much.
I would say Villanova is Clemson right now. Because, you know,
I like that.
Nova won that championship in 85 under Danny DeVito. Raleigh Massimino. Same thing. And then Jay Wright with the belief and the plan and the build, you know, two championships.
And really good suits, I might add. He's got a Brent Skinner swag about him. Jay Wright does.
Absolutely. So, I'll say this. Volcano programs. And this, I'm going to write a book with all my little sayings, and I'm going to add this in, Mike. I'll give you co-author credit.
That would make my world if I could just get a blurb.
Volcano programs get caged animal syndrome at times. And this is what I think will happen at Auburn if they fire Gus Malzahn. And so, and I think this happened at Texas A&M too when they hired Jimbo. And I think they're an inactive, dormant volcano because they've never really erupted, you know. It's been since the 30s. But, you know, they get – and Alabama got this when they hired Nick Saban. Okay, Alabama went through Ray Perkins. They went through Bill Curry. They got sick of that, so they hired Gene Stallings. Stallings got the program back, won a national championship, won several divisions. He goes and retires. So then it's Mike DeBose, and then it's Mike Roll Tide Strip Club Price. And then they're like, okay, well, we're going to
go. And that's Mike Shula.
Mike Shula, who was up and down. And then they were like, you know, Shula won, I think, 10 games.
He did okay.
The Orange Bowl.
One good year.
The year before he got fired, which is 05, 06, I think they had a losing record. So they were like, all right, here are our two candidates, Nick Saban and Steve Spurrier. We're going to go get one of them.
Right.
And they almost hired Rich Rodriguez. They almost slipped off of that, but then they were like, no, we're going to go get Saban. And they weren't going to be denied, and they did. And I thought Florida was going to do that last year when they went to try to get Chip Kelly, because you're like, Chip Kelly at Florida is scary. It frightens a lot of people. And, you know, he obviously wanted to go to UCLA. So you get caged animal syndrome, and you just go hire a can't-miss coach. And I think Auburn's going to do that if they get rid of Malzahn. I really do. I think they're going to go just hire a can't-miss guy, whoever that is, and just let it roll. I mean,
it's not always easy identifying that can't-miss guy. I mean, surely Nick Saban was as close as we have to it. But it's not always easy finding that can't-miss guy.
There's no doubt. I mean, I think Southern Cal's to that point, or USC is to that point. We can say USC on this podcast, not my other one. But I think they're to that point. And there's a lot of rumors out there as to who they're going to go target if Clay Helton doesn't make it. Because you know, USC, since Carroll left, it's just been keeping it in the family. They just keep hiring former assistants. You know, they hire Lane, Kiffin, and then Sark, and then – you know, Helton gets the job, and it's just all, you know, Auburn has done the same thing. You know, their last two hires have been former assistants. And I think Malzahn's done a good job, all things considered. And Gene Chizik obviously won a national championship, but they can't get any consistency. So volcano programs get caged animal syndrome, and when that happens, sometimes they just make, like, an unbelievable hire. So,
Yes, indeed. There you go. All right. We took a major detour from the topics du jour. So, all right, of the topics, you know, you've got Georgia losing its top receiver. You got Jimbo Fisher rumors out there. You've already got Heisman talk. You've got UConn bailing on the American, which is, you know, has repercussions because the American likely will try to find another program. Who will that be? What strikes your fancy here, going from top to bottom?
I'm going to go, you know, I'll briefly mention the Georgia receiver thing. I think Georgia's got a lot of receivers that have some potential. Some are young. Some were highly regarded guys like Demetrius Robertson, highly regarded recruit, hasn't done a whole lot. You got a grad transfer and Lawrence Cager coming in from Miami, who's a taller guy. But, you know, Georgia's receiving core that's the position that really took a hit. There's no Mecole Hardman. There's no Riley Ridley. And those two guys played a lot of good football for the passing game. On top of that, there's kind of a, there's a new offensive coordinator in James Coley. He's a little bit more, you know, historically spread oriented than Jim Chaney. Although Jim Chaney did coach at Purdue, I think, when Drew Brees was there and Joe Tiller. But Chaney's kind of adapted over the years. You know, so I think that's interesting. The Georgia's going to be able to line up and run the ball pretty as well as anybody in the country with Swift and Harrion and Zamir White in the backfield, and then probably the best offensive line in the country, coached by the best offensive line coach in the country, Sam Pittman. But, you know, you can't be one-dimensional. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see if they don't have, you know, consistent targets and consistent playmakers for Jake Fromm to at least have, you know, Georgia's always going to run the ball, but at least have somewhat of a passing game. Combine that with kind of a new play caller and stuff, and I think it's a red flag for Georgia, you know, in terms of where they want to be. You know, they want to, people are talking about them being the number three team in the country or top three team, and I'm with you. I'm told talent-wise, they're there. I mean, but, you know, there are some question marks, and I think that Holloman getting kicked off, I mean, that was going to be their go-to guy. I've always thought mm-hmm. he was really, really good. Hey, here's a low four-star guy that's better than anybody they had. I think he's out of Conyers or Covington, one of those I-20 suburbs of Atlanta. But really a great player and just, I guess, had some off-the-field issues and got punted. So I think that's going to be interesting when you watch Georgia next year.
Well, I do, too. I saw an interesting stat. I can't remember where I saw it. And by the way, we didn't even mention Isaac Nauta, who a lot of people thought was going to evolve into a first-round tight end. He leaves early, so he could be a seventh-round draft pick. He lost his – and he started to come on late in the year. He lost kind of his mini security blanket at tight end, which every quarterback likes to have, particularly when you're less spread and more pro-style. And Nauta, he's gone as well. But I saw a stat where – It compared the returning production of the Alabama Clemson wide receiving corps to Georgia, and it's night and day. I mean, those guys have got like NFL combine units at wide receiver that have all produced, that are all going to be high picks, and Georgia's got like just a bunch of guys that are raw. Mm-hmm. So that I agree. I mean, I think that's in some cases that wouldn't be big news. You know, again, if this were the first two programs I mentioned and they had one of those guys kicked off the team for domestic assault or whatever, that's okay. We got three more of those. We just take them out of the prototype. Georgia does not have that luxury right now. And I think, you know, Jake Fromm was poised to have a career year, 'cause I think they're going to take the restrictor plate a little bit off. But I don't know now if that wide receiving core is going to be playmaking or not. If it's pedestrian, that does change the outlook for Georgia, despite the fact that they're loaded in so many other areas. I agree with you. All right, what's topic number two on the list that we neglected to get to in the first half hour?
So Jimbo Fisher, you know, there was a big article by Andy Staples, Florida graduate, really good writer, loves barbecue, I enjoy following him on Twitter, good guy. And I believe he writes for Bleacher Report now, that it outlined the issues at FA, and he's really dug into this topic too. This is not the first time he's written on it. The issues at Florida State and why FSU was bad. And the AD and, you know, Willie Taggart didn't throw Jimbo under the bus, but the AD threw Jimbo Fisher completely under the bus, and a former assistant coach was talking about it, and they were talking like, well, we were Alabama, and we were the Clemson, we were going to challenge Bama, and then it just went all downhill, which goes to show you, again, team recruiting rankings, because they recruited in the top five every year after the 2013 season when they won it all, and talked about the culture of the program and how Jimbo let it slip and all this other stuff. And I just don't, you know, sometimes when you have culture issues, and they have it at Tennessee, you know, Pruitt's got to kind of work through that. But sometimes when you have culture issues and you know you have the right guy, you know, there's light at the end of the tunnel, and you don't look like, you know, you at least look well coached or whatever. And I know Willie Taggart has had some terrible first seasons. I think the only place he didn't have a losing season when he was head coach at was Oregon, and he was only there 1 year, and he turned that around. So he does have a track record of stuff like this. I love the Kendall Briles hire at OC. But to me, you know, in reading that article, I thought it was kind of one-sided. I thought that, you know, what specific mistakes, you know, were they making to erode the culture? And honestly, those I think maybe were related to recruiting. I thought that what caused Florida State under Bobby Bowden to kind of backslide, and you got to keep in mind, FSU is a national brand. They're going to get the interest of kids across the country no matter what. But I thought, you know, you'd see Bobby Bowden, he'd always have a top three or four class. And then you started noticing there weren't as many Florida kids he was recruiting. You know, they go to Ohio and get a kid, or they go to California and get a kid, or they go here and get a kid. I just think when you're Florida State and you're loaded, in, as far as the state of Florida goes, loaded with players, I think you have to focus on that. And Jimbo, when he first got the full-time job, you know, his first class, I think, was around the same time as that Urban Meyer class that was ranked ungodly numbers in the country. And you look at it, and it's a bunch of Florida kids, it's a couple South Georgia kids, and a couple junior college kids. And that's it. And that had guys like LaMarcus Joyner, I mean, the backbone of that national championship team. And I thought at the time it was smart. Florida State, I think, was 7-6 coming off that year. So, you know, I kind of went back and looked at the recruiting and saw they're taking a lot of kids that are highly rated and hype type guys, and they are, you know, taking them from other places instead of maybe going and getting the Florida kid that's a baller, that's hungry, that grew up loving the Seminoles. And I think there's something to be said for that. The only program I've ever seen, and Clemson, I think, is going to be able to do it. The only program I've ever seen, Mike, that got greedy, and I call it greedy, there's another term, greedy programs, that got away from we're going to, you know, and I'm not talking about like Michigan and Nebraska that have to go recruit nationally. I'm talking, you know, we have got a loaded talent base in our backyard, and we're going to recruit the crap out of it, and that's going to be the foundation of our program. The only school I've ever seen that work at that kind of just decided to go all over the place that's not a traditional national recruiting school, and even, you know, during the Bear Bryant era, they'd often go up to Pennsylvania and get guys in Ohio and stuff like that, is Alabama. Because Alabama under Shula, you know, they were in-state oriented. They go down to Florida, do whatever. And Nick Saban's first class that won that first national title, gosh, that year in Alabama, they signed, I think, the number two class in the country. That year in Alabama, Julio Jones was in that class. Marcel Darius was in Alabama. I mean, the state was loaded. So he built it on that back and then expanded. I think the Florida schools get in trouble when they do that. I'll never forget Al Golden when he was at Miami taking a commitment from a defensive back from Massachusetts. I was like, you can throw a stone from your campus and hit three defensive backs that have the speed, the size, the ability, and the moxie to play in the NFL. And you're going to Massachusetts to get this guy? And so greedy recruiting, I think, leads to culture problems. And it leads to kind of – because – and I'm not saying you have to always take guys that are close by, but if you have that much talent close by and then you're going out going, well, this guy has offers from everybody in the country. He's from 10 states away and flies over, you know, the four programs he grew up dreaming of, but we're Florida State and we're going to go get him. You know, over time you do that too much. And then you look down at UCF and there's five guys that can play in the NFL that you should have recruited. And these guys are quitting and moving home or whatever. I think that's a problem. So they talk about culture and why the culture was as it was. And I don't know that it's necessarily fair to completely hang it on Jimbo. But I think that at Florida State, the times they've been down during my lifetime, which was the Bowden era and now, it's been when they've kind of taken that greedy recruiting approach.
There's a lot to unpack there. I would just say this. A couple things. Number one, I mean, in addition to recruiting, I mean, Bobby just got old, and it was time for Bobby to go. But again, you can't kick out a legend. If you're the AD, you don't fire, just summarily dismiss a guy that's put your program on the map. I don't care whether it's Bobby Bowden, Steve Spurrier, Tom Osborne. You gotta be a little delicate about those kind of things. But clearly it was time, and Jimbo had a lot of success there. I think the biggest thing for Jimbo, the Jimbo era, was Jimbo ostensibly had one foot out the door for several years, and it annoyed, I know a couple of Florida State boosters. It annoyed them to, the utmost levels. It was constant flirting with other programs, constant griping about facilities, and legitimately, it's amazing, two elite programs over time, like Florida State and Florida, were so far behind the other schools, the elite programs in facilities. You wonder, how in the world does that happen? But it did happen. Both were well behind the eight, you know, indoor facility. When everybody else had it, they didn't. Certain things with weight, you name it, they were so far behind. But I think that, to me, was the – I don't think the culture was bad enough to excuse what Willie Taggart was so inept at last year. I mean, for them to not make a bowl game for the first time in decades, that, to me, you can't pin that on Jimbo Fisher. I mean, Will Muschamp took over a toxic situation at Florida after Urban left. He still went to a Gator Bowl in his first year and a Sugar Bowl in his second year. That to me, is more on – that's Willie Taggart still having to prove that he's ready for that job, because his resume was not that impressive when he got the job. And it's great that he has Florida ties. That's what helps solidify that job. And you could sell it to the Seminole Nation that ignore the overall record, ignore the fact that he's not exactly – his accomplishments were not grand, but he's a Bradenton guy and he can recruit Florida kids. What coach at Florida, Florida State, Miami can't recruit Florida kids? Come on. I honestly believe Willie Taggart could be a two and done coach, which, to my knowledge, barring a scandal, has never happened at a major elite program. We've seen guys make it 3 years and get fired, but I don't know if we've seen it two. If they have another, if he lays another egg in year two, and it's not as if that team was devoid of talent last year. If he does that again in year two, I promise you there are enough Florida State fans that were never sold on that hire in the first place that their money will talk and a change will be made. So the Jimbo Fisher excuse, to me, it just doesn't hold water for Willie Taggart. I think it was a questionable hire. And year two, it better be marked improvement, or he could find himself on the outside looking in.
Yeah, and I do think that, you know, it was smart to hire Kendall Briles. I mean, I think that guy, when you look at what he did, look at the difference at FAU. He leaves FAU, and they go 2-10. You know, so I'll see. We'll see what happens there. But I, you know, that's the whole thing. And look, they get tattooed by Clemson next year. They lose to Miami again. They get tattooed by Florida again. Yeah, I mean, I think people are going to start grumbling because, you know, I mean, and they've recruited okay. I mean, you know, his first two classes were good. Looks on paper, at least. And there may be some sleepers. Who knows? But it's
you
just,
and I could get a top 20 recruiting class to Tallahassee.
I could probably sign the number one class in the country.
You probably could.
Me and you both could, I think.
Yeah.
If it wasn't, we'd produce the most NFL players probably.
Exactly. So he's going to have to do more than get recruiting rankings in the first couple of years there in Tallahassee. That's going to have to improve quickly. I think that's going to be an amazing storyline throughout the year, for a number of the reasons you mentioned. All right, what else we got? What else we want to hit here on the? We didn't even talk about the new transfer guidelines by the NCAA. We can get into that. I mean,
sure.
You know, here's my thing on that. First of all, it still reads pretty vague to me. I don't understand if you read the wording of it. it makes it sound like it's going to be harder to avoid the 1 year rule of sitting out and it's going to be harder to get a waiver. Mm-hmm. But okay, let's play hypothetical, JC. I am Joe Johnson, not the basketball player, but a stud quarterback recruit, and I sign at Arkansas. Okay, and it's clear to me that Chad Morris wants his transfer from SMU to play over me, and I'm not going to play as a freshman, and I don't want to wait, so I'm upset, and I want to transfer right away. And so that's my only reason. My grandmother didn't die. I don't want to be at Arkansas again because I didn't play as a true freshman. All right? So you play the role of the NCAA, and I'll play the role of Joe Johnson, stud quarterback, fictional character, stud quarterback at Arkansas, and I want to transfer to Michigan. All right. Dear NCAA, I want to transfer and I want to play at Michigan and I don't want to sit out a year. I want to play right away. What's your verdict?
No.
Okay. Dear NCAA, while I was in Fayetteville, as I was sitting the bench and with a clipboard, I looked amongst a sea of 75,000 fans and I saw one of them with a Confederate flag in the actual flag, a little logo in the corner, and therefore I don't feel it's safe. I don't feel safe here in Fayetteville, and so I feel like I should have my waiver right away and should be able to play next season. Now, what's your verdict?
You'd get the waiver.
Okay, thank you. So this rule only applies, these stricter guidelines to getting the waiver only apply in certain situations, but there are still going to be ways to get around it. Am I wrong?
No, and I think some attorneys are getting smart and, you know, trying to do it. Like, I thought Justin Fields was a lock, you know. I thought Tate Martell was a surprise, if that makes sense. I was like, and, you know, you don't know kind of what the – and I believe they both had attorneys that worked on it for them. And then the poor kid that left Georgia and wanted to transfer back to Illinois, you know, like, sorry. And see, stuff like that, Mike, just reinforces the nature that the NCAA goes soft on the haves and not on the have-nots. I mean, this would have helped Lovie Smith at Illinois. I don't even think we've ever said those words on this program. and this kid had, like, a legitimate issue, you know, and they were like, no, well – you know, Tate Martell and Justin Fields, high-profile guys going to Miami and, you know, Ohio State, two bigger brands. Oh, yeah, you know. And the same thing's true, you know, when you look at the poor offensive linemen that transfer from Coastal Carolina to Virginia Tech. He's from Virginia. I think somebody, his family, his mother, somebody has a brain tumor. And that's legit, and that's documented. If those aren't – those are the types of things that should be automatic. I get the PC thing and all that good stuff. And if something like that happens and you get an attorney, even if it didn't really cause you emotional stress, I think that's always going to be approved because the NCAA is not going to appear to be non-politically correct about anything. I mean, they're not. But this crap where it's like, you know – I'm sad because I wasn't playing. It's affecting my mental health, so I have to go. No, that you got to have more
reasons.
Yeah,
you don't go that route. Athletic. You don't go that route. But yeah. You can bend the truth to your favor.
Absolutely.
You can bend the truth to your favor. And is the NCAA going to take a hardline stance against that and take the public backlash from certain media types that are ready to pounce on that story to kind of fulfill their own narrative? No. They're not. And so you're still going to see a rash of kids that avoid sitting out for a year. You're still going to have the inconsistency, which is going to drive people crazy because they're going to look at it and say, well, how come he's sitting out a year and I'm not? How come he's sitting out a year and the transfer we just got, he is sitting out a year? I think it's still plagued with problems and inconsistencies, but – that is something that just came down and you're going to hear about it. I think that that continues to be something that is they're going to struggle with for a long, long time, because they know deep down, and every coach knows, if you just waive that rule entirely, especially with this generation, I hate to be that guy.
No, it's legit. Yeah.
I mean, look, I'm not that old where I'd be like, those damn millennials. Millennials now are turning 40, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm not trying to say that this group of kids is worse off than when we were kids. I'm just telling you the feeling now, particularly among quarterbacks, is if it ain't happening right away, I'm out of here. I'm bolting. The day and age where if you redshirted and then you wait till you were a third year sophomore or fourth year redshirt junior to be the starting quarterback, those days are done for the elite quarterbacks who feel like they should be playing right away, and they're all going to want to transfer. And if you have no penalty to do that, it's going to be the wild, wild west. And then you have obviously programs that are kind of, hey, look, you could play or here right away. I'm not supposed to say anything. Don't mention we talk. We know that goes on. Yeah. We know that goes on. So anyway, that's what I made of that ruling. I hope I'm wrong. I hope they actually make this more consistent and clear, but I don't expect it. Forgive my cynicism on that one.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that what happened to, you know, the NCAA tries to serve a lot of different, you know, constituencies. I think the coaches are the ones sounding the alarm about it, because, I mean, you with the transfer portal and stuff, you have different situations. You know, where there's no repercussions. Okay, there's two guys. Chris Steele, a five-star corner out of California, grew up dreaming of going to Southern Cal, visited five different schools, committed to all of them while he was on campus, allegedly. Ended up signing with Florida and saying they had the best defensive back coaches in the country. Then right after signing day, you know, I think the defensive backs coach went to Georgia. Gets there, and you know, from what I've read about the situation, the Gators sort of messed it up because he was roommates with a guy that was getting in trouble and got, you know, accused of some bad stuff and got, you know, subsequently left. And he requested a change, and it didn't happen. That's their side of the story. So he leaves, and then he commits to Oregon. So he's going to Oregon, right? Well, then he's like, no. I think I'm going to go to Southern Cal, which is where he should have gone to begin with and was committed to begin with, because that's the school he grew up dreaming of playing, and it's at home. So you have a situation like that. This kid's never played a down of college football. He went through spring practice at UF, and he's just transferring. I mean, that's eight different times his plans have changed. And I think these are young people. We're in a social media world. There's a lot of false sense of celebrity with social media. Chris Steele, I think, is a good kid. I just think he legitimately loves all the programs that were recruiting him and couldn't make up his mind. And then you have the situation with Brew McCoy, another, you know, five-star type kid out of California, where, you know, he signs with Southern Cal, right? And then so Cliff Kingsbury gets the offensive coordinator's job. And he's like, okay, well, I'm in, you know, because he's a wide receiver. And so Kingsbury then, out of left field, gets the Arizona Cardinals head coaching job. Who's not going to leave? You know, I mean, you're going to be a coordinator at Southern Cal. You're going to go coach the Arizona Cardinals in the NFL, make what, $4 or $5 million a year again? Yeah, I'm driving across I-10, I think I-10, and hitting up Phoenix, man. So he gets all pissed off, he and his family, and I think that has something to do with it too. And because of the transfer portal, he bolts to Texas. Texas starts working on the appeal for him to be immediately eligible, extenuating circumstances, all this. Meanwhile, Southern Cal hires Graham Harrell, another former Texas Tech quarterback who runs the exact same offense that Cliff Kingsbury does. In fact, Graham Harrell and Cliff Kingsbury may have been at Texas Tech at the same time playing for the Pirate. Okay.
Graham Harrell was, and I only know this because I called the game on radio in the Gator Bowl. Graham Harrell was the quarterback at Tech when Michael Crabtree was showing out at wide receiver.
Ah, okay. Yeah, Kingsbury was way before that then. So that's, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Graham Harrell. All right. So Harrell is now the OC at Southern Cal. So they're running the exact same offense Coach Swag did. Okay? Or Coach Handsome. He's got multiple nicknames. So for you ladies out there, that's Coach Handsome. And so he goes to Texas. All right? Tom Herman. You know, the love. They Texas preaches love within their program and stuff. Goes through spring practice. And then puts his name in the transfer portal again and goes back to Southern Cal. And so, you know, I feel bad for Clay Helton because you got to take these guys. They're two of the most talented guys out of Los Angeles area. Oregon has been sort of eating their lunch in Los Angeles lately as far as players go. They're talented, and they can help you win. But you have to kind of wonder, Mike, you know, if those types of situations – sort of made everybody kind of say, hey, wait a minute, we need to make sure that, you know, and then along with all the quarter, like the Tate Martell thing, I mean, Tate Martell basically transferred the day after Justin Fields went to Ohio State. Come on, man. You're telling me that was extenuating circumstances? I think that they look at all that and look at kind of the optics of it, and they're like, we're going to create a monster here if we don't start kind of tightening the screws on these things. Unfortunately, I just don't know that it's possible because, like you said, you know, go get an attorney. He can kind of, you know, I don't want to say weasel, but, you know, spin it in your favor. Finagle it in your favor. And, you know, then what are they going to do? I think they need to streamline the rules, maybe do away with waivers, except, and I would say this. I would say, And in academia, you know, when you talk about like appeals committees and things like that, when you're talking about academics, you know, let's say J.C. Sherbert was at you know, Campbell University in Buies Creek, North Carolina, and I had a bad semester and I was on probation and I made a 199 and I was supposed to have a 2.0, and they say, well, you're academically suspended now. Well, I could go appeal to a committee and say, you know, and it just says extenuating circumstances. There's no criteria. And I could say, well, you know, my girlfriend broke up with me. You know, I had a hard time because, you know, somebody was really mean to me. I was getting bullied by one of my professors and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the committee would either say yay or nay. There's no criteria. They take it on a case-by-case basis. So because the NCAA is a gigantic academic bureaucracy, they're taking these transfer things like that. That's the wrong way to do it. Sports is not – sports you learn, but sports are not academics, okay? Sports are black and white. There's criteria. You got 10 yards for a first down, okay? The field is 100 yards long. I mean, that's the bottom line. You can't change those things. So what I would do, Mike, I would say, okay, if someone in your immediate family, meaning, you know, immediate family dies or is sick and is going and has terminal illness, if you have a documented financial hardship, and in that case, what I would do, most of these schools have emergency funds for athletes. You know, and the emergency fund cannot help you with it, you know, or something. If you've suffered some sort of issue at the school, you know, I think that the player abuse thing at Maryland would probably fall into this category. You know, I don't know that, you know, that the Justin Fields thing is a slippery slope. And what I would say on those situations is, as soon as it happened and it was reported, if you leave the team and say, put your name in the transfer portal, then it's more legit than if you wait until the end of the season to see how much you're going to play. And I would just spell it out and say, if you meet these criteria, we will approve you. If not, under any circumstances, are we going to waive the rule?
And there it is. All right, we are over time. Any thoughts on – I realize we don't talk a lot of American Athletic Conference on this podcast, but to go back to the original point, the beautiful thing about college football is, even though we are in an oligarchy of sorts, fans care about You got gamblers. You got people that just love to watch a college football game, no matter what it is. That's one of the beauties of college football. American has made strides. It's not just UCF. Like, that conference in the major sports has been relevant. I think Mike Oresko has done everything he can to convince people there's a Power Six, not a Power Five. I don't think you're ever going to really win that argument, but by golly, he's doing what he can. You got schools and their ADs claiming national championships that they haven't really won. They're trying, you know, and so I give them credit. So you lose UConn, which quite honestly is not that much of a loss. And UConn belongs in the Big East. I get that. Where their football program goes, to me, you're either going to be an independent that's going to be woeful for a long time, or maybe go to the FCS level and actually be a competitor like you were when you were with Skip Holtz back in the day. No Power Five conference is taking UConn in football, football only. I think they know that. I think they're wise enough to know that. So, okay, let's not waste any more time on UConn football. I do think it's interesting what the American is going to do. If they land BYU, to me, that's the ultimate. That's what makes the most sense. Now, BYU has its own thing going on. They got their own network. They got a powerful brand, if you will, within their niche. So they're not going to be crawling on hands and knees to go into the American. But that could be a good fit. Army could be a good fit, much like Navy is football only in the American. Army could be football only in the American. A program like FAU, who is in the Sun Belt. I don't want to take a dig at the Sun Belt, but the Sun Belt is not quite the American.
They're in Conference USA now.
I'm sorry, I said the Sun Belt.
Well, half the Sun Belt went to Conference
USA. Yeah. I beg your pardon. They went from Sun Belt to USA, much like FIU and so many of those schools that are now in CUSA, because so many of the CUSA schools went to the American. Anyway, you add one more team. If you had to pick one here in our closing minutes of our podcast here, who would it be?
I've narrowed it down to two choices.
Okay.
And you may laugh, but you may not.
All right.
UNC Charlotte.
Not laughing.
Or Georgia State.
Also not laughing. I think those are two. I can probably make your argument for you. I mean, Charlotte is, first of all, there was a time Charlotte under Bobby Lutz was very good in basketball.
Yeah, basketball. I'm thinking basketball market and facilities for football.
And football, they have a brand. Jerry Richardson Stadium, I've actually been there, is a beautiful, appropriately sized stadium. By that, I mean there's not, you know, 40,000 empty seats. It's got the right amount of seats for a program of that ilk. It's in a major market, which always matters for TV purposes. I could see that. BYU to me is still the sexiest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
But if BYU says no, I think that'd be the first call that is made is to BYU. If they say no, I think both those that you mentioned, and Georgia State, again, you've got Atlanta. Yep. And they've made strides in both basketball and football, and they play at the old Turner Field.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Not a bad venue for a football stadium.
I think that, yeah. And look, here's the problem, again, is that people like me and you that are smart, we're not making these decisions. It's university presidents and conference the you mentioned the commissioners earlier, and I think these guys are good, but they serve at the pleasure of the university presidents who I think they're clueless. If they were smart, you know, the American, look, I don't care how many national championships Danny White at UCF claims, okay? I could care less. And look, I think UCF athletics is rolling, and he's done a great job out down there, and he's got to stand up for his school. There's no doubt about it. I don't care how many national championships they claim. I don't care what dreams any of these group of five schools have. I don't care if they're hanging out waiting for an expanded playoff. I'm against them being in an expanded playoff because you can't tell me that an American conference school that goes undefeated. So LSU was 9-3 and played UCF in the Fiesta Bowl last year. LSU actually showed up and tried, unlike Auburn the year before, and they won going away. You can't tell me if you're looking for the eight best teams that the American or App State or whoever's going to be that good. They're just not. They need their own playoff, but I digress. I don't care how many times they do that. They're not going to be a football league, a powerhouse football league. However, in the sport of basketball, you've got Memphis. You seen how they're recruiting lately? They're coming back. It's the Penny Hardaway is actually doing a great job recruiting. You've got Cincinnati. You've got
Houston.
Houston. You got Wichita State.
Yeah.
You've got a lot of programs in that league that don't just have a chance to go to the NCAA tournament. They have a chance to go to the Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, UConn leaving, I think, sort of hurts them. I think UConn, you know, it hurts their football, but it helps basketball going back to the Big East for sure.
Yes.
But the American at the top and in that upper echelon, that it rivals the Big East as like a Power Six. It's really like a Power Seven. And they got the new contract with the SEC now where, you know, you got the SEC Big 12 Challenge with 10 of the teams, and then the other four are going to play home and home with an American team. Like, I know South Carolina's playing Houston next year in that thing. And Houston was a dagger. They were a 3 seed, dude. Five slamma jamma, baby. Oh, they're back. So, I mean, I would make this move not just with football in mind, but with basketball as well. And Charlotte's been to a Final Four. I know Georgia State has been, because they've kind of been on the rise. They've been good. And Lefty Driesell coached at Georgia State. Do we know that piece of trivia?
I do know that, yes.
But they've got a real shot at basketball. Both of those schools have extremely large student bodies. They're kind of on the mold of UCF and USF. One's in Atlanta, one's in Charlotte. You give East Carolina an in-state rivalry? Arr! I don't know. I that's where I would look if I were them. And look, BYU is a national brand. They're like, I kind of rolled my eyes when they said we want to be the Notre Dame of the West. But really, with the religious connections and stuff and their football tradition, they have a shot at being not as big as Notre Dame. I mean, nobody made movies about BYU in the 40s starring Ronald Reagan. Should go out there and win one for the Gipper. But, you know, they have a shot. So I would definitely go BYU one. And then after that, you know, Charlotte and Georgia State, man, those are my picks.
Now they could do, and I'll just end it on this note. They could do the old okey doke, and you know what they could add? Nothing. They could just wind up being an 11 team conference, play 9 conference games every year. I can't imagine they go to 10. That'd be a true round robin like the Big 12 does. But they could just, and keep in mind, addition is not always addition financially. So just adding another school doesn't always mean more dollars, because that's one more slice of the pie that has to be doled out. This is the Big 12's logic. The Big 12 still is at 10 teams. They could have added UCF. They could have added Houston. They could have added a number of schools that would have made sense. But you better guarantee those 10 institutions already in the Big 12 that they are not going to lose a penny of TV money when it's rationed off in another piece of the pie. So that wouldn't shock me either if they just don't add anybody. They don't have to. They could still just function the way they are and be like, no, we're just fine. Goodbye, UConn. We'll sit on the hand that we have. All right, we're way overdue, but I do want to thank again BP Skinner Clothiers for their great sponsorship of this podcast. If you haven't already started your summer attire, your fall attire, if you will, there's no better place to go than Brent Skinner and Company. And again, when I say go, you don't really have to go anywhere. You can just sit put right where you are. He'll come to you, size you up, get you set, and you will be ready to look your very, very best. Don't have to worry about going to some chain store and a pushy salesman and getting an inferior suit. Hey, it's buy three, get one free day here at so-and-so. You know what that means. It means, first of all, it's marked up more than it should be anyway. Secondly, you're not getting quality. Third, you got to go in there. And I don't know many men that love going in department stores and spending hours doing that. Instead, have Brent come to you and have him take care of everything the way he does for so many people nationwide, from regular business people to athletes, coaches, and yes, broadcasters like myself. Visit bpskinnerclothiers.com. It's bpskinnerclothiers.com. Set up an appointment, and Brent Skinner will come out to you. JC, we've gone way over. It's amazing. Not a single game has happened, and somehow we made this maybe the longest JC and Morgan podcast in the history of mankind.
Yep.
But if you're fortunate enough to be enjoying your summer on a beach somewhere, on a boat, or even if you have to do the honey-do list, hopefully we killed some time for you in a positive manner.
Absolutely. It was great. Now, you can get this. Subscribe on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, the Stitcher app. Just about anywhere you find podcasts, you can find JC and Morgan. And, boy, the last three or four episodes we've dropped have had, you know, 1,000 more listeners or so. So we certainly appreciate it.
That's fantastic. The word gets out, and like I always say, when people are mad that they haven't heard one in a while, that makes me happy. I want you to be angry at that. So keep on voicing your concerns. If we slack off a little bit, we try to do it on a weekly basis, certainly during the year, maybe more like every week and a half or so during the off season. But we're going to keep coming at you this summer and give you your football fix. So for J.C. Sherbert, this is Mike Morgan saying so long for now. We'll see you next time on JC and Morgan.